Thanks for downloading this podcast. I'm Kelly Beattie of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during January. Now that the holidays are over, maybe you've got a shiny new telescope to call your own. That's great. You're on your way to discovering many amazing things in the night sky. But here's a tip. Fumbling with unfamiliar screws and knobs out in the dark and cold is no fun. So set up your scope completely indoors, and make sure you understand how it works before taking it for a test drive. Then go outside during daylight, when you can see what you're doing, to check the focus and to align the finder scope on a distant tree or utility pole. 2017 opens with one of the year's best displays of shooting stars. The quadranted meteor shower peaks before dawn on January 3rd with a short, sharp burst of activity. These meteors get their name from Quadrans Muralis, an obsolete constellation near the handle of the Big Dipper. They seem to radiate from that point in the sky. Fortunately, this year's peak is timed pretty well for North America, but you'll have to stay up really late, into the wee hours of the new year, to see the most meteors. Do that, and you might be rewarded with perhaps one per minute if you have really dark skies overhead. Now, if you miss seeing the quads, don't fret. The great thing about winter is that the sky can be incredibly clear, making the stars seem all the more like dazzling gems. And right now, evening skies feature an amazing collection of bright stars and a nice assortment of planets. But let's start with the moon. Its cycle of phases, from new to full and back to new, takes 29.5 days, which is almost a full month. So it's no surprise that moon and month have the same Latin root. During January, first quarter falls on the 5th, full moon on the 12th, last quarter on the 19th, and new moon on the night of the 27th. The point here is that the first days of 2017 will find a lovely crescent moon in the western sky after sunset. But it's got some serious competition for your attention. Minutes after the sun goes down, and maybe even beforehand, you'll easily spot brilliant Venus. It's high up in the southwest and unmistakably bright. In this situation, Venus is sometimes called the evening star, but it's not a star at all. Anyway, it sets about 4 hours after the sun does. The red planet Mars is in this area too, though it's not nearly as bright. In early January, look to the upper left of Venus by about the width of your clenched fist held at arm's length. That medium-bright, slightly peach-colored point of light is Mars. Watch Venus and Mars throughout January, because they'll get gradually closer together and be only about half a fist apart at month's end. By the way, you can't see them by eye, but both Uranus and Neptune are over in this part of the night sky right now as well. Once it gets good and dark, and you've had your fill of evening planets, swing well around to your left until you're facing southeast. You'll have no trouble picking up the distinctive bright stars that outline the frame of Orion the Hunter, who seems to be leaping up from the eastern horizon this time of year. More on the Great Hunter in a moment, but for now, take a look at the celestial real estate between Orion and Mars and Venus. Not much to see, is there? This is the realm of two large but dim constellations. The one to Orion's immediate lower right is called Eridanus, a long, winding river of faint stars. Now, some scholars think Eridanus represented a real river to the ancient Greeks, perhaps located in Central Europe. No one quite knows for sure. The other faint constellation, farther west, is Cetus. In mythology, this creature was a large whale, shark, or sea monster of some sort. Okay, let's get back to Orion. Look for the distinctive vertical row of three stars that mark his belt. To its left, by about the width of one fist, is the red-tinged supergiant star Betelgeuse, or maybe you've heard it called Betelgeuse. In any case, it marks one of the hunter's shoulders. One fist to the right of the belt is icy white Rigel, marking the hunter's left foot. Follow the belt upward, about two fists higher, and you'll encounter a reddish star called Aldebaran, and it marks the angry eye of Taurus, the bull. Aldebaran also serves as the anchor for a loose, V-shaped cluster of stars called the Hyades. In early evening, the V is lying on its side, with its bottom pointing to the right, and its top, the bull's horns, pointing to the left. Depending on the darkness of your sky, you might be able to pick out anywhere from just a few to as many as 20 stars in the Hyades. Curiously, Aldebaran is not part of this family of suns. It's just a bright star that happens to lie between us and the cluster. Now look higher still, by about one fist, until you spot a fuzzy little spot that you can just cover with the tip of a finger. This is also a star cluster called the Pleiades. How many individual stars can you count in this cluster? 5 or 6? 7? This grouping is very distinctive, and it's recognized by many cultures, past and present. From the Celts to the Maori to the Aztecs, everyone seems to have a story involving the Pleiades. They're even mentioned 3 times in the Bible. In ancient Greece, these stars were known as the Seven Sisters, all daughters of Atlas and his nymphy wife Pleione. How the girls ended up together in the sky varies from tale to tale. In one version, things went from bad to worse for the girls after their father was forced to carry the heavens on his shoulders. With Dad out of the way, Orion, the hunter, started to pursue them, and his intentions were not honorable. This chase scene went on for 7 years. The sisters prayed for deliverance, and Zeus transformed the girls into doves, then stars, to escape the lustful hunter. Another version of this story ends more tragically. The sisters all commit suicide after learning their father's fate, after which Zeus raises them up into the sky. I like the many origins for this cluster found among Native American tribes, some of whom say the stars began as boys, or puppies, or even women who love onions more than their husbands. The Japanese know them as Subaru, meaning coming together. You think I'm kidding, right? Well, the next time you see a Subaru car on the street, check out the logo. It's a stylized group of stars. Anyway, there are way more than 7 stars here, roughly 1,000 altogether. Any small telescope or binoculars will show you dozens of them, and they're really quite beautiful. Located about 400 light-years away, these stars formed together within the past 100 million years. It's the kind of stellar birthplace that astronomers think our sun had when it formed, though all of the sun siblings have long since drifted away into anonymity. That's what will happen to the Pleiades someday as well. To the sisters left, about 3/5 away, is the bright star Capella, which derives from the Latin words for little goat. Capella looks like a single bright beacon, but it's actually 4 stars in all. One pair much like the sun, and a second pair of cooler, redder dwarf stars, about 42 light-years away. It's at the top left corner of an irregular pentagon of stars that outlines the constellation Auriga. This is Latin for the charioteer, one of 48 constellations recognized in ancient Roman times. However, this pattern was first recorded long before that by sky watchers in Mesopotamia who noted a constellation called Gam that represented a curved sword or crook. You can make out that arc using Capella as one end and then curving down and toward the right. Auriga has also been seen as a goat herder, first by long-ago Bedouins and later in Greek mythology. In fact, Capella takes its name from the Latin word for a small female goat, and just to its right is the faint triangle of stars called the Kids, as in little goats. To this day, the constellation Auriga has something of a split personality. Artists often depict it as a charioteer with a goat perched on his shoulders. But in ancient Hindu astronomy, Capella was important because it represented the heart of Brahma, the god of creation. By about 8 p.m., Orion has risen well up in the east, and coming up beneath him are 2 bright stars. On the right is Sirius, the brightest star in the nighttime sky, and on the left is Procyon. These mark the hunter's 2 dogs. And finally, here's a puzzler for you. Guess when Earth is closest to the sun in its orbit. Think maybe it's in June or July when it's hot here in the Northern Hemisphere? Nope, it's actually closest this time of year, on January 4th to be exact. Use that handy little fact to stump your friends and family. If you want more sky watching tips, check out skyandtelescope.com. Until next month, I wish you clear skies.